When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
So you think that you can tell us how to live our lives? Never questioning the thoughts from which your moral code derives. You think that suffering is part of some great plan that's been devised. I wonder what will it take for you to start?
Yo, welcome to the Atheist Experience. My name is Kenneth Leonard. With me today is Dave Warnock. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kenny. What's up?
What's going on? If you're watching, you may have tuned in today expecting different hosts, but Matt is recovering from being sick, and so the ACA turned to its very best backup options. Unfortunately, those guys were also unavailable, but Dave and I could be here, so here we are. And we'll talk about Dave and the incredible work he does in a moment, but first, I got to get through our usual weekly announcements. So first of all, The Atheist Experience is a production of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 charitable organization dedicated to the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of religion and government. If you'd like to support The Atheist Experience and the ACA, you can become a member. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and click that join button below the video. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/theatheistexperience. If you're watching, you'll see there's a fundraiser below the chat. Feel free to participate in that. One of the great things about the ACA being a charitable organization is YouTube is not going to take a cut of anything that you donate. So please feel free to do that. We now also have a channel that houses all of the shows on the ACA in audio podcast form. If you don't want to look at us, visit tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. You can also become part of the Atheist Experience community and our fan-run Facebook pages. There's facebook.com/groups/AXPFG. There's the private fan group at groups/AXPPFG. And we have a new fan-run group, the AXP Fan Debates group. So check that out if you want to mix it up. If you would like to continue the discussion with us after the show, join us in ACD, our fan-run Discord server at tiny.cc/ACA Discord. And be sure to check out our other shows. You got Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, Talk Heathen, and The Nonprofits. We keep this party rolling from Thursday through Sunday. Now, the ACA is not just the people that you see on camera. The real core of this organization is our incredible group of volunteers who make up the crew. Do we have the crew cam? Can we spotlight these guys who are making it happen today?
My God, look at them. Woo!
And now, with all of that out of the way, Matt, we hope you feel better soon. Obviously, we're all praying for you, sending various incantations. Dave sacrificed a goat, I believe. We're sending...
Slit his throat.
Yeah, the producers are telling me... Yeah, they're sending thoughts and prayers to Matt's house today. So with all of that out of the way, feel better, Matt.
as a former pastor, I feel obligated to lead us in a prayer. Father God, we just thank you right now for our brother Matt. No.
Having like I'm flashbacks sorry, here.
Something took over.
Dave, what have you been up to? For people who don't know who you are and what you do, what should they be aware of?
Well, you know, I do the thing Dying Out Loud, and it's kind of an organization that sprung up after I got diagnosed with ALS 2 years ago. In fact, little do most people know that you and I just met up in Chicago just a couple of days ago. We met for the first time in person, as I met a few other people there. And I was actually in town for a Lou Gehrig Day and went to a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. And it was Major League Baseball called a Lou Gehrig Day, and it was June 2nd this year, and they're going to have one every year, but it's just calling attention to ALS. As many of you know, if you follow me, you know I have ALS, this motor neuron disease where my my muscles are failing. I'm losing strength in my arms. Pretty much that's where it is right now, but it's going to spread to my whole body, and it's a terminal disease. And so that dying out loud is my effort to make the most of what I've got left of life. And in essence, I talk about living out loud. And so if any of you are familiar with that, I think they'll put my links up in the chat, and you can follow me along there if you want to. But that's what I've been doing. And a lot of shows like this, and everything I can put my hand to, I do it just to talk about things that matter.
Yeah.
That's what we do today, right?
Hell yeah.
Talking about Absolutely. Things that matter.
Well, speaking of talking about things that matter, what callers should we jump into?
Oh, so many juicy ones. So many good ones. You see them. I don't know. Yeah. What do you want to start with?
I think Cameron in Maryland looks like has probably been on the longest. I don't know how you feel about talking with them.
Yeah. Let's talk to Cameron. Yes.
Cameron, what our notes say is that you are an atheist with questions about the purpose of life without a God. How can we help you today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm an atheist that's been listening to the show for close to a year, and I haven't been able to get enough of it. Like, I love all of your episodes, and I'm so happy that you took my call.
The show is The Callers, so thanks for calling.
No problem. I came forward as an atheist a little over a year ago, and since then it's just been so hard for me to live my life with the same level of optimism that I've had before as a Christian. And recently I've been wondering if perhaps lacking a purpose in my life is what turned me into such a hardcore pessimist. So I've just called in to ask for advice.
Hmm. What was the purpose before you let go of your faith or belief?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, I was asking, what before letting go of your faith, what was your life's purpose then?
So I lived my life with the purpose of everything that I do is to be done to glorify God.
Okay.
And, you know, is something that was really hard for me to do because just going to church and listening to sermons and reading the Bible and studying it, it didn't make sense to me. Like, God just sounded like an asshole, and it didn't make sense to me why I would want to glorify somebody that condones, like, this whole everything
that
sucks in this world.
Cameron, let me ask you, what brand were you, if you will? What strain of Christianity did you adhere to?
I was a Southern Baptist.
Okay. Evangelical, yeah. That's a broad term I use to describe the kind of Christians who really believe in a born again experience, and Jesus is the Son of God, and the Bible is the Word of God. And you know, can I just jump in and kind of speak to what your question is here, and then Kenneth may have some thoughts too. But I am the whole idea of purpose, and if you've listened to the show for the last year, you've probably heard me talk about a little bit of my story and facing a terminal illness as an atheist, whereas I used to be a believer for 37 years and believed that I was living a life to glorify God. But as I've come away from that and been out of that for the last 10 or 12 years, I realized how narcissistic this particular God must be to demand and request our unwavering worship. I was thinking about this. We were coming back from Chicago. We were in an Uber. We took an Uber back to the airport, and as luck would have it, the dude was playing worship music. And the same thing happened when we were in New York a couple months ago. I couldn't believe it. We're in these big cities that I think are supposed to be liberal, and every car we get in is playing worship music. But all the songs were about how we're supposed to completely worship God night and day, and that we're nothing without Him, and we owe Him everything. And I said to Bevan, even, because I was wanting the driver to hear it, because I was pissed off and I wanted him to hear that we're a couple of atheists in the back seat. But the idea that the God that they serve, that we used to serve, demands this nonstop, constant adulation. What kind of a being, person, or God needs that kind of worship 24/7? What is wrong with the character of a person or a thing like that? I can't imagine if we encountered a person like that, that was going around and telling everyone to bow down to me all the time and worship me and give me all your attention and all your praise, we would run as far from that person as we could. And like you said in your comment, that God must be an asshole. And yeah, that idea that we're supposed to give that kind of devotion and allegiance to someone who, from all outward appearances, doesn't do diddly squat for anyone around us, and us included. So the purpose that we're looking for, we make ourselves. And the idea that we had some kind of a purpose when we followed God, it was an illusion to begin with, because we were just living our lives and we were giving all this undue attention to this being that we never heard back from. So as an atheist, we get to make our own purpose. And I'm not saying we have to, I'm saying we get to.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. Cameron, I was, you reminded me of a quote. I don't remember where I heard this, but because you used the word pessimism, and the quote goes something like, optimists are people who think that this is the best of all possible worlds that we're living in, and pessimists are people who realize that they're right. So I was actually talking to my therapist about this exact issue just a couple of days ago about purpose. And I don't know about your theology, but when I was a believer, there was this idea that the life that we're in right now is just a warm-up, and what we're waiting for is eternity. So if, like I did, you've let go of that idea, then this life, these moments that we have, really are all that we have. I find that sort of imbues my life with a greater sense of purpose and also of urgency. I'm less likely to feel good about sort of wasting my time in light of the idea that this life is what I've got. So if I've got opportunities to get out into my community and do stuff, or to try to make someone's day better, volunteer, whatever the case may be, I better jump on it, because this isn't the warm up. This is the entree here. We're living it. I don't know if that helps at all.
It helps so much. The screener said that I'm calling from Maryland. I actually drove from my home state, Virginia, to my boyfriend's house in Maryland because my family is extremely Christian and they don't leave me alone anywhere because I still live at home and they don't respect my privacy at all. But while I was driving here, I was listening to the podcast. I listened to the Atheist Experience on Spotify, and I was listening to the episode from last week, and there was a caller who called in and said that, he said, I'm so sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's all right.
That's okay.
But he was talking about living in the moment, and right, he said that after you pass away, what's left of a man is his reputation. And that really helped me as well. Like, I thought about it a lot, like, I want to be a good influence in other people's lives, because my family and my community has always put so much negative stigma on atheists, of like, atheists are these angry, bad people that are horrible, and they're what makes the world terrible. And I'm sitting here like, does that include me? Like, I'm over here, you're talking about me.
Yeah. No, and be prepared for that. It's in my experience, it's rare for people to engage with me as an individual atheist with individual beliefs. It tends to be easier for a lot of people to sort of paint us all with a broad brush. So it may be useful in talking to your family and friends who don't quite understand, to just emphasize that you're still you. You're you. You're not all of atheism. You're a person with your own beliefs, working things out, trying to make sense of the world, and just wanting to believe true things.
And that's why I, for one, am very conscious of using the word atheist. I used to, early in my deconstruction process, kind of use the soft A word, agnostic, and kind of avoided the capital A atheist, because it had such a negative stigma, like you said, Cameron. But the reality is, until more of us who are good people, who are generous and kind and loving people, let people know that I am a good person. I'm an atheist and I'm a good person. And you need to get to know that, because that's the reality. And until more of us are openly out about being an atheist and then live our lives in front of these people and they see that we're good people and that we're not monsters and we're not mean and angry, we're good people. And we just happen to not believe in your God. That's it. That's the only difference. And so, you know, it will take some time, but they will see that you are good. Live your life, show them the purpose you're living, grab the moments. What Ken has said is so true. And if you haven't looked into what I'm doing, the Dying Out Loud stuff, follow along, look, go to daveoutloud.com and listen to some of the stuff I've talked about, because I talk a lot about the moments and that this life is the one life we have and that we have to make the most of it. And we are the ones that are responsible for that. And if we don't like the story that our life is writing out, then rewrite it, write your own story. And you're gonna be fine, Cameron, and your family and friends and those who are questioning you and giving you a hassle, they're gonna calm down a little bit as time goes on, I think. I hope.
Yeah. Is there anything else we can help you with, Cameron?
No, that's it. You guys answered my question and did so much more.
Sweet.
Thank you, Cameron.
I would encourage you to check out especially that the private fan group, the Facebook group. That is a group that is really designed for people who aren't out atheists to still be able to find a community. Mm-hmm. And without sort of broadcasting who they are all over Facebook. So you are so far from alone. There are so many people who are in the exact position that you are in. And if you would like to talk to some of those people, that's a great place to do it.
Thanks for the call, Cameron.
Thank you guys so much.
Awesome. Have a nice day.
Have a great day.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Awesome.
Oh, she's just getting started on the journey of truth.
Yeah.
And reality. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's rough. I mean, I remember back in the day when I was going through exactly that same stuff. It's hard. But if you're watching this too, if you're in Cameron's position, you're not alone.
No, there's a lot of us out there and more every day. Let's go to Joe in Virginia. What do you say?
Joe in VA. Let's go. Joe, you are on with me and Dave. Joe, what can we do for you? Our note says that you wanted to talk about bad moral arguments from atheists. What can we do for you?
Yeah, do you remember me? I talked to you last time with Jenna. You probably remember that call, right?
I do. Yeah. How's it going, Joe? Nice to talk to you again.
Good. No, I like you and Dave. You guys seem like really good guys. I like that you treat people with respect. So I have a lot of respect for you guys. So.
Thanks, Joe.
I wanted to. I'd like to go for, you know, we talked about morality last time.
Yeah. Yep.
So
yeah.
So you talked about, you said, and I asked you, are there things that are like really wrong? Is there this objective right and wrong?
Yes.
And what would you, is there an objective right and wrong?
Yeah. So my position is one that you'll hear from a lot of folks in this community, where I would say that with respect to certain goals, we can make objective decisions about the effects of our actions and arrive at objective morality. So if my goal is to have, you know, a healthier community and to support my family and to sort of promote happiness and well-being in my sphere of influence, then there are objectively better and worse ways for me to go about doing that. Is this one of those bad moral arguments you were talking about from atheists?
You know, anything I say is just kind of just challenge you. It's not out of disrespect, okay? So don't take it.
That's fine. Bring it.
Okay, so now what if I don't share your goals?
Well, like what would be an example?
Let's say you're saying we have to agree on something, right? For there to be...
Well, he used the example, Joe, of if he wants to have a healthy and happy community and get along with his neighbors, for instance, then there's certain sets of behavior that are going to contribute toward that. And so if you're, suggesting that you would not share in that goal of having a happy and healthy community and neighborhood?
No, that's not really my goal. So let's say, are you saying I have to have that goal?
Well, let me see if I can get in front of what I think is about to happen. So by analogy, let's talk about health. If you and I both want to be healthy and you think that the way for you to be healthy is to go to the gym and get super jacked and tan, and my goal for healthy is to be able to, you know, run a 4-hour marathon. Would you agree that we're both trying to be healthy?
I just don't think that's analogous to morality. I think.
Well, follow me here. So, but would you agree that we're both trying to be healthy in that scenario?
Sure.
Does the fact that health as a concept is open to interpretation make it not useful?
No, I just don't think it's analogous to morality or anything you're saying. I think.
Let me try.
Like you're saying we have these goals and you have your goals, yeah. And let's say the rapist or the sex trafficker or the child abductor or the killer or the thief or the person who steals people's identities on the computer, they have their goals, right?
Well, yeah. Well, but so here we let's, so let's dig into this. So if in my neighborhood, you've got on my block a dozen families, and 11 of those families, you've got people who think that the best way to be happy is to work their jobs and take care of their families and volunteer with their time and give to charitable organizations and go to church and whatever. And then there's that one family where you've got the guy who thinks the best way to be happy is to, abuse other people in some way. If we're talking about maximizing happiness for the largest number of people,
that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about morality.
Oh, maybe it would be helpful if you define what you mean by morality then.
Yeah, let's start with that, Joe. You said bad moral arguments from atheists. Let's start with a good moral argument from a Christian then.
Yeah.
Or a theist. What is that position there?
Well, I think if atheism is true, and meaning God doesn't exist, and naturalism is true, I think the only real thing that you could honestly go with is moral nihilism. I think that's really, I think you could say, that like Kenneth is saying, make up his own moral values and that we all have to agree on this. But you're kind of just saying this is how I want to live and that everybody's got,
Well, no, but I'm asking sort of you.
Like, yeah. What do you think morality is?
Yeah. I'm asking you give me your good moral position as a theist, as opposed to the bad moral positions from us atheists.
Yeah, what do you
give me the good moral position? You go.
I'm giving my thoughts. I'm saying if God exists, then I think you can have objective moral values. I think if God doesn't exist,
such as what?
Right. You're not telling us what morality is.
Such as what? Give us some moral positions that you want to.
Yeah. Let's really be clear here. So if God exists, what is morality?
What is morality? That there are objective about things that are actually right and wrong.
Such as?
So you're saying that morality is the set of rules of what is right or wrong?
No, I didn't say rules. I think you said rules, but I think that you can have, that people have intrinsic moral value and that there are objective things that are bad, such as wrong, such as murder or rape or that. I think if God does not exist, naturalism, I think every person can just make up his own opinion. I don't think anybody has any moral obligations or duties.
But are you talking about sort of the why, though, behind things being right or wrong? Is that what you're getting at as far as what morality is?
I think you need something to ground morality.
That's not what I asked.
That thing is God.
I'm asking you really specific questions for a reason, because it helps carry the conversation forward. So let's just go with your scenario. If God exists, then what makes something right or wrong? Because isn't that what morality is?
I would say probably it's just in God's nature, God's commandments. I don't, it's a difficult question, I agree. But I think under atheism, I think you have to logically be a moral nihilist if you're going to be honest.
What if my goals are different from God's goals? What if God's that guy on the block who wants to hurt people?
Right, then you'd be doing something wrong, wouldn't you?
Okay, so if, let's say that, I'll just pull up an example of something that, would never ever happen, right? Like say God told me he wanted me to kill my firstborn son as like a sacrifice to him or something. And
he would never do that. Jack.
Right. And
I was like,
I don't think that's a good idea. I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound like it's going to carry me any closer to being a happy person. It's not going to be good for my kid. So no, I'm not going to do that. Am I doing an immoral thing?
That's a good question. I mean, that's a hard question for me to answer. Now, let's say God does. Let me turn it around. Let's say that God doesn't exist and all there is here and you rape or you kill somebody. Are you doing an immoral thing? Are you morally obligated to help a person and not hurt a person? Because the guy who rapes someone or kills someone, they're benefiting from that, right?
Who's benefiting? Who's benefiting?
Who said that?
If we have a society, if we as a species,
you don't think the rapist or the killer is doing it for a reason?
I think they're doing it for a reason, but I would argue that it does not benefit them.
No. Are you so, or Joe? Anyone. Wait a minute, Joe. Hold up, Joe. So it's clear that you're coming from the position that without God as the moral lawgiver, that we're all just nihilists and we do whatever's right in our own eyes, and there is no right or wrong or good or bad. That's what you're trying to say, correct?
That's not what I said. I didn't say you are anything. I said the logical position, which I think comes with being atheist, not you specifically, but if atheism is true, I think that's the logical position.
It's not at all the logical position. I'm sorry. You're just, it's fucking wrong.
I mean,
because I don't believe in God, but there's nothing, you're saying that because I don't believe in God, let's just personalize it, that I'm going to go out and rape and kill all the people I want. In fact, I do rape and kill all the people I want. You know how anything, like Penn Teller says,
that number
is zero, because I don't want to do that, Joe. And I'm an atheist. So the fact that I'm an atheist and I don't have God looking up, listen to me. The fact that I'm an atheist, that I don't have God looking over my shoulder, you're not listening, Joe. Joe, you're not listening. If you're saying that the logical conclusion of a society without God is moral nihilism and chaos, then you're going to have to personalize it, because you're talking to two atheists who don't believe in a God and thousands of others who watch the show who disagree with that position. And you're saying that that's the logical position. And it's not, because it's not happening.
Well, I think it is, but
I mean, here's the thing, though, because Joe, if your position is morality is whatever God is, whatever's going to make God happy, okay, then you're in trouble, because I didn't say that either. Okay, well, whatever is consistent with God's nature, is that better?
Yeah. Yes. You know, I'm not. Okay. It's a hard question. Yeah, but I
think, right. So if morality is consistent with whatever is in God's nature, then. Yeah, then I don't really care about morality. If morality is a conversation about, it's sort of a growing dialogue and body of knowledge about what's going to be best for humanity, well, now I'm interested. And if that conflicts with whatever is consistent with God's nature, then I don't really care about what's consistent with God's nature. I don't even know that God exists. And nobody seems to be able to agree about what God's nature is, which is also a problem.
I would agree with that. I agree. That's a hard thing. I just think there needs to be a grounding for morality.
There is.
And you think that grounding is God.
It's that conversation about what's good for humanity.
Yeah. Well, if you go out throughout history, how many murders and rapes and all these things have happened throughout? They don't seem to care about humanity. So why do they have to care about humanity? And you care about humanity. Maybe other people don't care about humanity. Have you ever thought about that?
But this is the thing. If there's people in our society who, you know, are, you know, atypical in with their, you know, brains, and they don't care about humanity, fine. The rest of us need to be worried about those people. We need to deal with those people and sort of mitigate the risk of those people hurting others. But the rest of us do care. The rest of us care. Can you choose to not care about your own happiness?
Now, if I said we all have to care about animals, do we all have to care about animals? And let's say I say it's wrong to eat animals. Is it wrong to eat animals?
There's a discussion to be had there. Under some circumstances, I think it would be wrong to eat an animal. Under others, I think the case could be made that it's not. What happens if one person says what's consistent with God's nature is being a vegan, and another sort of congregation says, no, God wants us to be strict carnivores? How do we resolve that?
Because
that's the position, that we're
right.
in.
Nothing. Nobody's right. Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong with everything.
Well, that's is that a true statement? Come on. That's a ridiculous thing to say. There are things to be known about the nature of reality. We can know things in the same way we can know things about health. We can know things about morality. We can make assessments about what's good for us and what's not good for us.
Okay. Well, I disagree. I think you can say what's good for us, but you can't say I have to care about what's good for you. Like, I might care about my own well-being, but I don't have
to. I mean, yeah, you are not under any obligation to care about anyone else's well-being. Fortunately, most people do not think in this way. So,
Joe, here's my position on morality. What about slavery?
I think most people thought that way when slavery existed, or if you go to the Nazis, or if you go.
I bet the slaves didn't.
I don't know if you want to get into a conversation about God's morality and slavery. I don't think you want to go there.
Really quickly, before we, I just have to ask.
As Kenneth said, we don't have any moral obligations. So why?
I didn't say that. So here's what I'm gonna ask you: how do we know what is consistent with God's nature?
I don't know. How do we know? I don't know. That's a good question. I just think we need a grounding for morality.
And you think that should be God, but you don't know what that is.
But you don't know. This doesn't sound like a sincere conversation anymore, Joe.
I don't know that you know what you're, I mean, you think the grounding, it needs to be, have a grounding, and you think that grounding needs to be in God, but you don't know what that is. Do you realize how little sense that makes?
No, I think you, Dave, that, you know, I'm trying to be respectful to you, but you don't seem to be giving the same respect, so.
I'm trying.
Kenneth, just because I disagree with you doesn't mean, no, I'm not having an honest conversation. I'm trying to.
I'm not talking about whether you agree with me or not. I'm asking you, I asked you very straightforwardly, you know, because you're the one who said that morality needs to be grounded in this consideration of what's consistent with the nature of God. So I'm asking you, how can we know what that is?
I think maybe one of the most powerful tools is probably our moral intuitions.
Moral intuitions.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Kenneth, I don't know that you, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but you're talking in circles, and you seem to be, I mean, I was a believer in the God of the Bible, and the God of the Bible, so the Bible was how we got a glimpse into what God's nature should look like, because that was our definition of who this God was, and how he acted, and what he wanted. And if you look at the God of the Bible, I'm more moral than that guy, because I don't think it's okay to own another human. And I don't think it's okay to wipe out a whole city of people, including children. So if you don't know what the nature of God is, and yet you want our morality to be tied to him, I don't know how we have an honest conversation about that. And I think that's what Kenneth was saying.
It seems to me that if we can't know what the nature of God is, then we're stuck in the same position that the atheists are already stuck in, of having to figure it out on our own.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I would agree with that. You know, we do have to figure out, but I just don't think anybody has to do anything. I think if you go to different places, different cultures, like if you go to Africa, they'll say killing. If you go to Uganda and Kenya, you still live in Uganda, and they'll say, you know, it's illegal to be gay. To be gay there, they'll say, you know, that's the right thing. You know, if you go to, you know, maybe a Muslim country, they'll say, you know, women can't do this. That's right. If you go back in time, though, you know, killing, slavery was accepted. So there's,
right.
I mean, everybody just.
Exactly.
And you know what's wild? The examples that you just used are people who are grounding their sense of morality and what they think is consistent with the nature of God. But yep. There's things in those cultures where they'll disagree with each other. They don't even agree necessarily on the same God. So now what?
I mean, in Uganda and Africa. Uganda and Africa, it's not religious based.
Well, okay, depending on where you go. But Joe, I think we got to move on.
Anyway,
we got a bunch more callers.
Yeah, we got a lot of calls. Thanks for the call, Joe, and lots to think about there.
All right,
maybe.
Huh?
Have a good one.
All right, Joe.
All right. Hey, Joe's thinking about it. So kudos to Joe.
I don't know.
For kicking it around.
I guess.
You know.
I guess.
Trying to be positive.
I was going in circles, man.
Yeah. How would you feel about Richard?
Where's Richard?
Richard is in number two.
Yeah, he's been there a while. Let's talk to Richard.
All right. Richard in Nevada. How the heck are you? You want to talk about the note that we have is a little confusing. It says spontaneous generation is that life can generate from non-life and all life has genetic code, which proves it is illogical. I'm not sure what that means. Richard, maybe you can clear that up for us.
Well, you pretty much hit it in a nutshell. Spontaneous generation is a garbage mouth lie. Life cannot derive from non-life. All life has a genetic code.
What is spontaneous generation?
What?
Can you help me out? What is spontaneous generation?
Life coming from non-life.
Okay.
Non-life.
All right.
So what is the point you want to make or the question you want to ask? I'm sorry. Go ahead and say it. Say it again. What's the point you want to make or the question you want to ask?
Well, I just want to illustrate that life cannot come from non-life, that all life has a genetic code.
How are those two things related, the two ideas that you're referring to? You're talking about abiogenesis on the one hand, and you're talking about information being contained in our DNA on the other. What do those have to do with each other?
Well, actually, the thing I would really like to talk, I just wanted to point that out. I just wanted to point out which is extremely obvious. But the thing I would really want to talk about is what I was talking about last week, that if evolution were somehow proven false, by default, actually proves God. That's a logical conclusion.
Oh, you called in last week about
what
that,
is,
right?
Wait a minute. What does evolution have to do with abiogenesis?
See, now you're just deflecting. I asked you, I'm just trying to illustrate one simple point. Is all I'm trying to, I'm not trying to deflect, answer one simple point.
Okay, what's the point?
No God. evolution has to be true. If evolution were somehow proven false, then by default actually proves God. Mankind cannot logically exist if there's
okay, Richard, we talked about this last week.
If you were to boil down evolution into a nutshell, if you were to describe it to say a 5-year-old, what would it be? What is evolution?
That we evolved from a single cell organism in 4.5 billion years.
So that's a claim. Evolution is a mechanism, right? We're describing how we got from point A to point B. Do you understand that distinction?
100%, yes.
Okay, so your original statement, okay, what you told the call screener was you've got abiogenesis on the one hand, and then you've got genetic information on the other. And I'm asking you for the second time, what do those two things have to do with each other?
Okay, actually, mentioning spontaneous generation was an obvious mistake. I just wanted to point out the obvious in that. I'm more concerned about proving what I talked about last week regarding...
So you told the screeners, the screeners something else so that you could get in instead of talking about evolution.
If you can just answer that question that I asked you, then I'd be happy to move on to the other thing about evolution and God. So I'm just asking you, what does abiogenesis have to do with genetic information?
I don't understand the correlation. I'm not a scientist. I can't explain that. So all you're trying to do is deflect right now.
Listen to me, Richard. I'm not trying to deflect. And I would.
Okay, Kenneth, are you there? Are we
urge
there?
You, I saw that information. Oop, did I freeze up? I'm sorry about that. So, Richard, I'm communicating with you honestly here. I'm just saying you put these two concepts on the table. You've got abiogenesis, and then you've got genetic information. Now, these two concepts are products of completely separate fields of study.
Information. Let's drop that. That's really not important. That's not my point. I was just trying to point out.
No. I'm going to tell you why it is important. Okay. Because, and you touched on it. All right. You said you're not a scientist. Neither am I. Dave, are you a scientist?
Nope.
Awesome. So what are we doing here, Richard? If you are not a scientist, if you don't know what you're talking about, then what are we doing here?
Because I've heard scientists claim all life has a genetic code, okay? I've heard scientists say that.
Okay. How did we get there?
Life has a genetic code, and it seems to be true. Apple seeds cannot produce apple seeds have a genetic code to produce apples. Orange seeds have a genetic code to produce oranges.
Let me try helping you out. Because an analogy that I think might work is language, okay? So... the way that languages develop over time, do you understand that English today is not what English was 1,000 years ago?
Yeah, I understand people like to redefine words. I understand that. That's the world in which overcomplicate the meaning of words.
Let me jump in. You froze up again, Kenneth. Richard, I was on the call. I mean, I was on the show last week, and I remember you calling in. It seems to me, I'm just going to say this, that you told the screeners something that you really didn't want to talk about, but you didn't want to mention evolution again because it probably wouldn't have gotten you to the call. So you're trying to put something up to the screeners that you're really not talking about. You want to talk about evolution not being true, and then you want to claim that if it's not true, by default, God created all life, and that creation is true. Said that last week.
I will be forthright.
Pardon?
Well, like I said, the main reason why I mentioned spontaneous generation is to just point out an obvious point, but that's really not that important to me. What's more important to me is if evolution were somehow proven false, the operative word,
I know.
If it was somehow...
I know that's important. False, I know that's important to you, but it doesn't make it true. It doesn't make it true. You could prove evolution false tomorrow, and that doesn't by default jump us to God creating Adam and Eve in the garden. You don't get to make that leap.
What would it take in your mind to prove evolution false?
Again, you're missing my point. I'm not trying. I'm just saying if. You need to understand what I'm saying. If evolution were proven false, by default proves...
Okay, let's do it. Let's say it. Okay, so right now, evolution's off the table. We have no idea how we arrived at biological diversity here in planet Earth. Now what?
Okay, I'm sorry. Say that again.
I'm saying, okay, so we'll take evolution off the table, okay? Let's just say we have no idea how we arrived at biological diversity here on this planet, okay? Now what? Go ahead and prove there's a God.
Well, you have to understand that human DNA is extremely complex. It's more complicated than any computer ever built. So if there's no God and there's no evolution, logically, we cannot exist. It's illogical to suggest otherwise.
Okay, so I want to point out what you just did. You're saying, so evolution's off the table. We have no idea how we got here with our complex genetic, you know, code, for lack of a better word. Hang on, man. So what you just did was you said there's an extremely complex thing. We don't know how it got here, therefore God. Do you see that that's what you just did?
You're not understanding what I'm saying.
Okay,
run it by me again. Yes, we are.
Run it by me one more time.
God exists, and evolution is not true. How can we logically exist? Anything you say will be...
There you go. I'm telling you, this is so simple. What you're saying is, if evolution isn't true, then we don't know how we got to biological diversity on planet Earth. Therefore, because we don't have an answer, we're going to shoehorn in God to fit that gap in our understanding. God goes where the gap is. It's like there's probably a name for this. God of the gaps.
Gaps.
Have you ever heard of this, man? I'm not trying to be a dick, but this is textbook what you're doing, Richard.
Love comes from God. Evil and confusion comes from the enemy.
Okay, Richard. Richard, we're done with this. I'm gonna hang up on him, Kenneth. But first of all, Richard, you called in under false pretenses and told the screener something else, and you're not been honest, and we're tired of this conversation because you're not listening.
It's disappointing. Well, hey, I'll tell you what. How would you feel about going across the ocean, talking to Ahmed? It might be Ahmed. I think I called him Ahmad earlier pre-show.
Ahmed. Okay.
You want to do it, bro? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Coming in hot from all the way from Egypt, we've got Ahmed. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Okay. Our note says that you wanted to talk about how Allah is evident.
Yeah, so Allah is God's name in the Arabic language. So
we're familiar. God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are taking the position of atheism, and one would take the position of atheism or agnosticism if he says that he does not see or does not find obvious evidence for God, and I think that this position is not reasonable.
Okay, so where do you see the evidence?
Okay, so let's agree on some premises first. So God would be a conscious being, an underlying mind, would you overarching all over the universe, right? Would accept that?
I'm willing to run with whatever definition and attributes of God you want to use, my friend.
Yeah, define Allah in your terms and in your experience and worldview.
I would just focus on this attribute because God is not a material being and is not part of this universe, but obviously he has will and he has intent and he has a plan. So I would focus on the attribute of the mind. All right.
So how is that evident?
There's an immaterial being that is not part of this universe that has a mind and everything that comes with having a mind. Are we on the same page so far?
Yeah. So we look around us, we are in a material universe. We have creatures other than us. Those creatures are biological creatures like animals, like insects. And those creatures, let me ask you this question, for example. When you look at a beaver, for example, okay? When you look at a bee, for example, so a beaver would build this dam. A bee would build those hexagonal structures that they call home. A bee would go and find flowers, and it will signal through dance to its comrades to come and find the pollen. Can you give me an explanation how a beaver understands what a dam is, how a beaver would construct this design with all its sophistication? How would a beaver know that a river is something that he can build a dam on, and who is teaching him that? And how does a bee understand what's a hexagon? And how does it understand a code for communicating locations of pollen? And I can just go on giving you examples.
Yeah, I know you could, but we don't have that much time. It's only an hour and a half show.
I'm so really afraid that you're about to do what the last caller did. So I want to try something.
Let me talk here a minute.
Let me
respond to this, because you could go through the whole animal kingdom and give example after example. But Ahmad, I want to be as kind as I can here, but you do understand that in our world that we live in here, Kenneth lives in Chicago, Illinois. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I used to live in Nashville, Tennessee. Almost anywhere in this country you go, if you can talk to millions of Christians who would use that same argument you just gave us about the beavers and the bees and all of the animal kingdom. How do they know what to do? And their rational explanation for that, or their evidence of a God, would be the Christian God, the God of the Holy Bible, not Allah, but Jehovah, Jesus Christ. That God would be the one that they would say, this is evidence of that God. So what do we say to them when you're telling us that in your worldview, in your understanding, these things in the animal kingdom, rather than trying to answer that question and say, how do they know to do? Because instinct and evolution, obviously. But nonetheless, you have to understand that Christians use that same argument. Look at the trees. Look at the sky. Look at the ocean. How can there be no God? This stuff just didn't happen. We hear that shit all the time. So how do we pivot from it being an obvious explanation for the Christian God to it now being an obvious explanation for your God? Help us with that.
You want me to answer this question? So I answer this question in three very simple points. Number one, I did not define what I want to prove to you as being Allah or being Jehovah or being Brahman. It doesn't make a difference to me. My premise.
You said Allah is evident. That's your note to the callers, to the screeners.
Yeah. I qualified Allah as a name for God, and I qualified the attribute of God that I'm focusing upon as being a mind overarching this universe. So this is number one. I don't care which God, which name of God you would pick, and which religion you would take as the way to worship God. This is not my issue at all. This is number one. Number two, for Muslims, we accept that Yahweh, or in English you call Jehovah, is Allah, and we accept that God the Father is Allah, and according to my reading of the Hindu religion, I accept also that Brahman is Allah, and I accept, actually it is part of my belief, that there is only one God, and that he did not leave any specific community on the face of the earth to oblivion. He sent messages and messengers all over history, and those messages were tailored to the needs of the time and geography and development of humans all over history. So it's okay if somebody who is a Jew would say, this is evidence for Yahweh for me. This is not a problem at all. In my religion, he is worshiping the same God. And Jesus is a prophet of God, and Moses is a prophet of God, and so is Abraham. So this is not an issue whatsoever to me. And number three, because I said I'm going to go through three questions, the reason for this is not to put a name on it. So if I'm telling you, from where does a beaver get the information of building a dam, its instinct is not an answer. Instincts do not draw drawings for dams. And I'm not telling you, look at the tree or look at the sky. I'm asking you about the specific non-biological information that are needed to build a dam, the specific geographical information that a bird, for example, uses for migration, the specific understanding of sign language, which is a sophisticated thing that a bee uses to communicate a GPS location for pollen. This is non-biological information. If you call it instinct, fine, great. Call it whatever you would like. This is just a name tag. What is
the
information? Because our sources of information. And we go back the absolute mind. So if you believe that there is no God, this is just material, where is this information emanation to each and every single living creature in the animal kingdom, as you say, is coming from?
Okay, so, Kenneth, you take it.
right, a couple things. One thing that came to mind with everything that you just laid on the table was I'm wondering just very briefly if you are aware that there are groups of people, there are tribal groups that have been discovered around the earth, you know, by researchers, anthropologists who have no God concept whatsoever. Are you aware that this is a thing?
I'm aware that this is a fact. This is also part of my religion, that some people who would receive a message, some people might separate from them and they would alienate themselves from their people and they will forget the message and new generation will have no concept of it. And God pardons them.
I'm not talking about the message. I'm talking about there's no concept of any kind of a God whatsoever.
This is also not my issue. My issue is those guys.
All I ask is if you're aware of that. That's all I'm asking.
I am aware, but...
Okay. All right. Just a thing I wanted to touch on, just because it sounded like earlier you said that God has visited everybody on earth with a message. So I just wanted to get that out there. So here's where we're at. You're talking about behaviors, okay? You're talking about what you see as complex behaviors in the animal kingdom. Now, as far as I know, every single one of these creatures that you're describing that behaves in a certain way has a brain, has a nervous system, has as senses with which they interact with the world around them. Okay, as far as I know, everything that you're describing as non-biological is in some sense reducible to things that are happening in these creatures' bodies and brains. I'm wondering how you respond to that.
I respond to that from my background. So I'm a communications and electronics engineer, 30 years experience with information systems.
Okay.
I can tell you this, the most sophisticated brain on earth is the human brain. The human brain does not inherit any maps or any dams or buildings or electronics or circuits just by being human. We only inherit physical traits. When we want to know how to build a building, we go to school. The source of information is accumulation of knowledge, and it has to be delivered to you through education. And you get education from another mind. It's either written, but we get educated. So my question to you is, apart from humans that have this thing of not getting knowledge programmed into them for a reason that I can also explore with you, where does every single living creature on Earth get its information to be able to live its life from? Designs, strategies, plans, ideas about, very accurate ideas.
Yeah, we get it. Okay, we don't need all the examples anymore. So, I mean, what you're doing is you're pointing to what you look at as, you're smuggling in the idea of design here. You're talking about complexity. You're talking about complexity in the natural world and saying, without a God, how do we explain it? You're doing precisely what the previous caller did, where you're saying that if we can't explain where stuff came from, then it must be God. But I would urge you to look into what biologists say about these behaviors. I got into a whole thing with a guy recently about monarch butterfly migration, and everything about monarch butterfly migration is reducible to interactions that are happening in the monarch butterfly's bodies. Okay, there's hormonal things happening. This isn't really that complicated. Okay, if you've got little baby beavers that are doing what beavers do,
yeah,
I don't know where you're going with this.
Let's wrap it up, Kenneth. Ahmad, we're told that you did the same argument on Aaron. Ahmad, you need to listen now. Did the same thing on Aaron Raj's show just yesterday. Here's the bottom line, Ahmad. You're trying to make the argument that if we can't prove what, like Kenneth just said, if we can't prove that something else, then it must be God. And then you're saying all the gods are the same, so it doesn't matter which God. We just have to, and that doesn't make any sense because all the gods compete with each other. And the Christians would be very offended that you would say Allah is just the same as their Christian God. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. So what you're saying makes no sense. And you've made your point. We disagree with it. We're not going to talk about all the rest of the animals in the animal kingdom because we have too many more callers to get to. So thanks for your call, but we're going to have to move on.
All right. I mean, I always wonder why these types of callers don't, I mean, why are they banging on the doors of professors in biology departments to talk about this?
Well, because they want to try to, they think Christians don't know any better and that they think they're, I mean, I got a note. He just did the same thing on Aaron Rice's show yesterday. Richard from Vegas just called in last week with the same argument. He tried to slip in the back door today. And they do the same thing over and over and over, and they don't realize how much they don't make sense. So moving on.
I'll tell you, looking at the queue, David in California looks very interesting to me. I don't know if anybody stands out to you.
I was going to say the same. Let's talk to David because he's got a great name. He's got a great name.
We like Daves around here.
We do.
And Davids. So what our note says is the evidence I use for Jesus is the fact that Jesus seems omniscient. David, does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's what I said. Though I wanted to kind of touch on something before I cover that. I actually carry both of your names. Kenneth David is my name. So
there we go. The 1-2 well, punch there.
I'm honored that you go by David. You're a smart man.
Yeah, what the hell?
Kenneth means to know or understand, and David means friend, so they're both good names.
Where are you getting your information about Jesus?
He's omniscient.
Well, I have to say, I'm probably up there with Dave as far as age.
Are you now?
I'm 58 years old.
Okay.
I've got you beat by 7 years.
I accepted Jesus. Huh?
I've got you beat by 7 years, but go ahead.
Oh.
No, I'm 7 years older than you.
My age, though.
Thank you.
You're looking good. So you must be feeling good, then.
Stop hitting on Dave, okay? We're talking about Jesus, all right? Where are you getting your information about Jesus?
All right. Okay, so I've read the Bible numerous times.
Me too.
But
me three.
I would just say, to me, when I read the Bible, it just seemed like Jesus was, he seemed to know everything about the Old Testament, and he seemed to know everything about really knowledge in general. And so to me, when I read his words, even today after 40 years, it seems to me that I have really the same threshold of evidence that I had when I was just 18 years old. I don't know how old you guys were when you accepted Jesus, if you did, but I was 18.
I was too. Significantly younger than that. But so are you saying this is your evidence that Jesus is what? A real
all-knowing.
Is God is real? Is what?
Yeah, I just seemed to know that he was God when I read the Bible. My threshold of evidence at 18 years old was probably far inferior to what yours would be, you'd say, or Dave's evidence is today, right? So when you guys first became Christians, your threshold of evidence was probably a lot lower too, right?
Well, when I became a Christian, I was a little kid. So
let me respond to that, because I was exactly 18 when I became a Christian and born again, spirit-filled Christian. But when you say threshold for evidence, I will say my threshold for evidence was the same then as it was 35 years later when I let go of Christianity, because the evidence is not there. And the idea that you can see the evidence of Jesus being omniscient in the Bible, you can't use the Bible to prove the Bible. Hmm. That's a circular reasoning argument. And if the Bible says that Jesus is all knowing, that doesn't prove that he's all knowing. It only proves that whoever wrote the books of the Bible wanted us to think that he's all knowing. And so, of course, the Bible is going to give you the evidence or the idea that Jesus is omniscient and is all knowing. But the evidence, the threshold for evidence, as you say, the phrase that you used is I never had any evidence. I just kept believing it for all those years. And I don't see any evidence now. That's why I'm an atheist. I'm open to the evidence, by the way.
But you must have had someone kind of evidence, otherwise you wouldn't have accepted it.
I had people that I was following and people that influenced me, and I had an experience that I felt like was something that galvanized me and that riveted me, but it was all experience. It wasn't any evidence.
So I get into it with people about evidence, because I want to be really specific. When I use the word evidence, I'm talking about anything that can be used to demonstrate that a claim is true. Okay. Now, if somebody tells me that their reason for believing in Jesus is that they toasted their bagel in the morning and the bagel toasting looked like Jesus, and that's what they're going to use to demonstrate that Jesus is true. So to them, they might say that can be used to demonstrate the truth of their claim. I'm not going to agree with them. So their evidentiary standard may be significantly lower than mine. I would ask you, whose problem is that?
You there, David? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, because people tell me about their evidence all the time, But if I'm operating from a standpoint of saying I want something that can be used to demonstrate the truth of a claim, and they're willing to accept something else and call it evidence, I think that's their problem, not mine.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's all I'm saying, that for every individual, I mean, I determine what my threshold of evidence is. Dave determined what his threshold of evidence was, mm-hmm. and it must have been met because he accepted it. So
I'm going to ask you this. In terms of your beliefs, right? How much do you care about whether the stuff you believe is true or not?
I care a lot.
So
what would it take to convince you that... Go ahead.
If I didn't put a high value on truth, I wouldn't still be a Christian. I would be an atheist.
What would it take to convince you that...
The point I was 18, I was like an atheist, so...
Okay. So is your best evidence for Christianity the claims about Jesus in the Bible?
Well, I'm not saying what the best evidence for you is, because that's what I'm talking about.
No, for you.
No, I'm asking you.
Evidence is something else to determine. Yeah,
for you.
Well, I'm just going to tell you what was enough for me when I was 18.
Well, I'm not talking to you when you're 18. I'm talking to you now. So I'm asking you right now, is your best evidence for Jesus being who the Bible says he is, what the Bible says about Jesus?
Well, I was using the omniscience thing.
Oh, let me phrase it.
Your idea of omniscience comes from the Bible. You said your evidence for Jesus' omniscience is from what you read in the Bible.
Yeah. At bottom, your claim is my best evidence for what the Bible says is what the Bible says, which is exactly what Dave said at the beginning of this call.
Let me ask you something, David.
Well, that's why I tell you what was sufficient for me as evidence when I became.
Right.
And that's, I mean, it would still be sufficient for me to this day.
So what would it take for you to change your mind like I did after all these years about Jesus and about the claims of Christianity?
I'd have to have like a major brain injury, probably.
Let me ask you this.
Are you saying I had a brain injury? No. Let me put it another way.
Maybe the cancer affected your thinking. I don't know.
Well, I don't have cancer. I have ALS. They're way different. But
you got what?
I have ALS. It's a terminal disease. I don't have cancer.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you had cancer.
No, never did. But that's okay. That's irrelevant. Here's the thing about omniscience, right. And I want to ask you something about omniscience. You said that you believe Jesus is omniscient, which means all knowing. We're talking about the attributes of God. Another attribute of God is that he's omnipresent. Do you believe that's true as well? That he's right. always present everywhere?
Yeah.
So let me give you this scenario and you tell me if you're okay with it. We've got Jesus watching everything and knowing everything. All the time, everywhere. We've got a little girl named Alice, for instance, and she's 9 years old, and she gets abducted and repeatedly raped by a demented person. And she is taken from a Christian family, and her parents are praying for her, but no one can find her. She's tucked away in a cabin in the woods somewhere, and she is crying out to God for help, and she's praying and crying and praying and crying. And Jesus is omniscient, and he knows this is going on, and he's omnipresent, and he's there watching her get repeatedly raped until the guy is done toying with her, and then he kills her, and they find her body in the woods a few weeks later. Are you okay with a God like that? Because I'm not, but I just want to know how you feel about that.
Well, I don't see how your opinion about whether there's a God that allows that really affects reality, because there's all kinds of bad things that happen in the world.
I know, but this all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing God allows it to happen to a 9-year-old girl who's incredibly innocent. Are you okay with a God that allows that?
Yes, Dave, but you were a Christian for a long time, and you know that God has to give us the free will to make bad decisions.
No, oh, does he? So God is more interested in giving the rapist free will than he is protecting an innocent girl.
Well, that's why he gives us his law, but you don't seem to like the law.
No, I don't seem to like a God that allows that. I'm not interested in the fucking law.
But doesn't,
I'm interested
doesn't
in a God who does what's
God
right.
Command that.
Pardon?
Doesn't he command that not to happen, though?
But he could have stopped it.
Did that.
He could have stricken the guy dead like he did Ananias and Sapphira in the book of Acts, because they stole money from God.
Well,
he killed them. Why couldn't he kill this rapist?
Well, yeah, but God could also stop the millions of abortions that happen every year too, but
oh, you're deflecting.
We're gonna sidestep. Yeah,
you're
we're gonna sidestep
deflecting
the issue.
Now, David, you got a great name, but you need to think through your arguments a little better, because that God is repugnant to me. If he can do something, I'm more moral than that God, because if I'm standing around watching that and I don't have arms that work, but I would do my fucking best to stop that rapist.
But I was trying to talk about God's omniscience and you're trying to take me into morality. But do you think your morality is superior to God's?
Absolutely, I do. The God of the Bible, 100% better.
Why don't you stop the rapist? Why don't you stop?
I could.
Why don't you?
If I saw one working right now.
Dave's not omniscient or omnipresent. Yes.
Show me a rapist right now and I'll go fucking stop it.
Good grief. I hate to do this, David, but every single thing that you're saying, it falls apart if you think about it for like a second. Okay. You're saying that God can't intervene in human affairs because it would somehow violate their free will. But if you read the Bible, there's all kinds of examples of this God intervening in human affairs. But now for some reason he can't. It's okay when Jesus is walking the earth to perform miracles. It's okay, like Dave said, for God to strike down people who steal from him in the book of Acts. It's okay for God to intervene all over the place. But now it's a problem. Do you see why this is nonsense?
Well, yeah, but you seem to be misapplying it here because God seems to intervene when people call upon him, okay? And you don't.
I just said this girl is calling upon him. In my scenario, the girl was calling upon him for help.
Yeah, but you're giving me a hypothetical, Dave.
I'll tell you what.
Walk
into any hospital anywhere in America, and you will find terminally ill people calling out to God, and nothing is going to happen for them. They're going to die. Their pain is going to stay where it's at or get worse.
Die.
David, I hope you can think through your think through your ideas a little better, because if I can change my mind after 37 years as a Christian, you can too. And I really hope you think through some of these arguments because they're okay.
Well, if you can't, then
we'll see.
That's a shame.
I've been a Christian for 5 years.
Huh? Okay. Well,
I guess
thanks
we lost
for your
him.
Call, David.
All right.
Yeesh. I got a little pissed there. Sorry.
I understand. No, I get it. And the idea that the book is the evidence for the book.
Stuff drives me fucking crazy. God. That.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Let's move on. What do we got here? Atheists not helping with social problems in society. Are you serious?
Yeah, we're gonna talk to that guy. Let's do it.
Jeff in California. Let's go.
All right, Jeff in California. Yeah, the note says you want to talk about atheists not helping with social problems in society. How can we help?
Well, I was just wondering. I listen to this show once in a while. Really smart people on it, and I said, well, why don't they take their intelligence and put it to something constructive, like. We've got so many social problems. We have problems with the police interacting with ADOS people. We have Israel-Palestine issues. We have a homeless crisis out here in Los Angeles. And that's what I was wondering. So that's what I wanted to ask you.
Well, how do you know atheists aren't putting their talent and intellect to help with social problems? Why do you make the assumption that there aren't atheists doing that?
Well, I go to an atheist group out here, Atheist United. It's the big shot out here in Los Angeles. And one thing I notice about being around atheists for many years, the first thing in any conversation, they say, as an atheist, they could tell you that they're atheists. They could tell you who their big shot thinkers are, like Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, et cetera. So in other words, if there was somebody that was an atheist that's come up with some of these solutions, I would have heard about it from these guys. Because they'd be like, here's our guy. You know, this guy, he come up with the plan for Palestine, but no one listened to him.
Is your argument that because in the local atheist group that you check out in L.A., you're not hearing people pitching solutions to social problems? Is your argument that that means that there are not atheists anywhere attempting to work with social issues?
No, I don't have an argument. I had a question. I've noticed there's a big atheist meeting.
It sounds like you're lumping all atheists into one group.
Yeah, what is the question?
Well, I'll start the question again. Why don't the atheists who have the intelligence of the people on this that I'm talking to now or who have the show, let's do it a couple of weeks ago, some lady, I don't know what her name was, Dillahunty, different guys, different people, take that intelligence and say, okay, I'm going to tackle this problem. We got a problem here in this country with ADOS and police. Instead of waiting for people to call up the radio show and make them look stupid because they believe in Jesus or Muhammad or whoever. So I'm going to put this.
Okay. All right. Let me answer this a couple ways, Jeff. People. Yeah. First of all, you're lumping us into groups that we don't belong in. Secondly, there are atheists that are helping with social problems. The group that I'm a part of here in Charlotte, North Carolina, just yesterday had an outing to help feed the homeless and care for the homeless people. I know of people all over everywhere that do wonderful things for society. One issue that you might want to think about for a minute, do you know that there are certain states in this country that if you are an avowed atheist, you can't even run for public office? Were you aware of that?
I heard something about that. Yeah, I heard.
Okay, so, you know, that might prevent us from going, hey, I'm an atheist, I'm going to run for mayor of this city. I wouldn't get 10 votes because we're viewed as monsters. And so when you see people doing things for helping society, just because they don't say, I'm an atheist and wear a big A on their shirt, doesn't mean that they're a God believer. So you're making a lot of false assumptions here.
Here in Chicago, I can tell you, I'm on my local community policing board. So I go to meetings, I talk to local police officers and the leadership for our district with the Chicago Police Department. I have never once walked into one of those meetings and gone, as an atheist, here's what I think. I just show up and I do what I can to make my community a better place for everybody who lives here. So it might be the case that there's a lot of us out there doing shit that you're not aware of.
Yes, of course. So who are your guys that have come up with these solutions? Because I've heard the atheists tell me about Christopher Hitchens and these guys, big shots like that. So who's come up with the plan?
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as an atheist solution to a social problem, because atheism is the answer to one question and one question only. It's do you believe in a God or gods? That's it. That's it. It doesn't tell you anything else about a person's politics or where they stand socially. I've met atheists who I think are absolute pieces of shit when it comes to social issues. So it tells you nothing about anything. So for social issues, you'll find more humanists operating out there. You'll find skeptics. You'll find people who are using other tools in their toolbox to attack social issues. But I mean, if your point is atheism has no bearing on a person's social or political stances, I would agree with you.
No, that's not my point. I'm saying people that identify as atheists, what are they doing to help the real social problems we've got in this country?
Tons. Dave's out there feeding the homeless. I'm working with the police. There's tons of stuff.
Well, I'm saying, do you know of any well-known atheists that come up with a solution or an approach to say, let's help this the police and ADOS?
Yeah.
Here is what it is.
I know dozens of them in my own circle, and I could point to other people. I mean, there are, you can find tons of atheists out there talking about policing, and it runs the gamut from people who are going to take more like really kind of conservative positions, like a Sam Harris would toward the police, all the way to people like my friend Cynthia, who takes, you know, kind of a more left-leaning approach, and everything in between, because atheism tells you nothing about where a person stands on social issues. So I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at, because you will find it atheists are out there doing work in their communities. So I'm not sure what you're really talking about. There's no Pope of atheism for us to point to and be like, oh, well, the Pope of atheism issued a ruling on what we're supposed to do about police brutality. That's not a thing.
Yes, I know that. I'm just saying it's people who identify as atheists. Would one of them have come up with an approach on how to deal with these issues? And I'm sure you guys, since you were connected, would say, yeah, we know this one guy down in Georgia. He's a atheist guy, and this is what he's come up with. Well, who is that guy? What is his plan?
On what issue? I mean, I don't know what you want us to do here. I mean,
I brought up three issues. The homeless crisis, Palestine-Israel, ADOS, and police conflict.
You can feel free to search for atheists and their positions on those things. You'll find there, I mean, there's dozens of things out there. We're not here to speak for anybody else. I know I have opinions on all three of those things. I'm sure Dave does too, but we're not here. This isn't like a social political type of show. We're talking more about what people believe and why, but we had to pick up this call because the note there about, you know, atheists not helping with social problems in society, that stands out because generally speaking, like everybody I know at the ACA is involved in volunteer work and working to help with social problems in society. So I'm not sure really what more we can do for you.
Well, no, you answered the question. It's a question I had.
All right.
Your answer, that's it. I couldn't expect anything else from you.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for calling in, Jeff. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too.
All right. That was interesting. Let's see. I don't know who else we have. Let's see. Dave, are you with us or are we? Okay. Oh, Dave disconnected. All right. Here's what we got. And I wasn't supposed to mention it. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's answer. I'll tell you what. I'm going to go with my own. Okay. We got another Kenny over here. So we got Kenny, in Oklahoma. The note says, you want to talk about the amount or type of evidence that makes it extraordinary? What are we talking about, Kenny?
Well, I don't know whether or not you accept, by the way, hello and hi.
Hi.
I called last week, and I like your catchy first name there, Kenneth.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. I was almost named Kenneth. My actual legal name is Kenny. That's because my mother just got over a C-section, and she wasn't in her right mind. But I was named after a man named Kenneth. But anyway, but it was never named Kenneth. Okay, let's get off that.
Yeah.
Okay, quality versus quantity.
Yeah.
Set extraordinary evidence that has a large cumulative buildup, or does it have to have a specific extraordinary quality, like a purple thunderbolt over your left shoulder with Jesus' Hebrew name on it or something? I mean, what?
Yeah.
How do you define or quantify or...
So you're using the term extraordinary, and I'm wondering if you're referring to there's a quote that's been around forever about extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Is that what you're pointing to?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just tell you, between the two of us, I mean, nobody's watching this. It's just us. I don't think that's a legit thing. Okay. I think Jay's back. I care more about, so you may have heard earlier in the show, I was talking about, to me, evidence is anything that can be used to demonstrate that a claim is true. Okay. It doesn't have to be extraordinary. It just has to meet that threshold of, we can use it to demonstrate that the claim is true. As long as it does that, it's evidence to me. So I don't know if that changes anything.
It does, because I obviously read some Wikipedia thing on you wrong, because I didn't know anything about you. So I looked you up
on me,
so I could come up with a question just for you. But
okay.
Obviously, I didn't understand anything I was reading, or it was wrong. Okay, so here's the deal. Would you agree, you and Dave both agree, that the majority of the people in the world right now are spiritual, if I use the definition of spiritual to mean individuals having the capacity to transcend themselves to find some additional meaning or purpose in life, not the meaning or purpose, but... just additional meaning and purpose in life. They can transcend themselves and go to something else. They can be a tree hugger. They can meditate on pond ripples that they had seen and remember in their mind and get a calmness, maybe activate some oxytocin or whatever. But anyway, they find meaning in life and the meaning in life might just be coming at peace with themselves. But can you acknowledge that people can actually be spiritual in that sense of transcending themselves in some way to add to meaning and purpose in life? That's usually the thing.
Are you saying that most people do have that ideology? Is that what the question was?
I think most people do approach, most human beings are spiritual.
Right. Yeah, so if that's true, I mean, I guess that may be true, but what, I guess I missed the first part of y'all's call. I apologize, I lost the power, but if that's true, what does that mean?
Well, I was going to go to a subset of that, which is to be religious.
Right. So if, let's say the vast majority of the people in the world are religious, so what? What does that mean?
Yeah. Because people can find meaning in anything. Right. I sort of object to the use of the word spiritual, just because I think it muddies the water a little bit. But I would go with you in saying people find meaning in all kinds of stuff. And we can use that as a jumping off point if you want to, but Dave's question is the one that matters.
What would that mean? If we were to determine that 75% of the people in the world were religious of some sort, what would that mean? What difference does that make?
It would mean that there's nothing extraordinary about being spiritual or religious, because it's common, and ordinary means to be common, status quo. The reason why there's something extraordinary attached to the resurrection of Christ is because it happened one time that this guy got
his
body back. It was glorified. See, it's called the first fruits of the resurrection, a Christian dogma. Even the Christians recognize that one person got a glorified body, Christ. And everyone else is waiting on the end of that. But I'm not getting to the resurrection. I'm getting to another point. And the point is that I believe that human beings are natural beings and spiritual beings, because they're able to operate under both things. And that's my epistemology. I don't limit my epistemology to only things that are materialistic, physical, or natural. I believe that I can be spiritual, transcend myself, and even to the point with my religion, which is the majority religion in the world, Christianity, and I'm Eastern Orthodox, which accounts for a third of all the Christians have ever lived, I'm extremely ordinary in a lot of ways. And so if that's ordinary, why should I agree with Kenneth? Why should I worry about, to a certain degree, agree with Kenneth that why should I be worried about Carl Sagan's statement, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, when I'm not extraordinary? And I mean,
well, but your claim is, Kenny, your claim that Jesus froze from the dead. Wait. Your claim that Jesus froze. Kenny. You've talked a lot. Hang on. My power went off, so I lost a few minutes. So I got to talk now. Your claim, you may be ordinary because a lot of people are like you. Big deal. Your claim that Jesus rose from the dead, which is a physical impossibility and is not proven in any way, is an extraordinary claim. And your claim that belief in that act, the resurrection, makes one a born-again Christian, which then allows them to inherit heaven when they die. Those are extraordinary claims, Kenny. So those require some extraordinary evidence. What do you have?
Yeah, and just to dovetail into that, just really quick, because at the beginning I said the thing about sort of the sufficiency of evidence and the nature of evidence, but what Dave is talking about absolutely, I mean, is legit. So yeah, if I tell you that I have a dog, it's not going to take much to prove that to you. But if my claim is that I have a personal relationship with an itinerant Jewish rabbi who resurrected himself because he was a God man 2,000 years ago, yeah, we're talking about a different thing. So,
what's your evidence, Kenny?
Yeah, what's the evidence?
I didn't call up to give evidence for the resurrection. I called up to make it to make spiritual things possible to a human being, that it's natural in far as being intrinsic for us to be able to comprehend spiritual and natural things. Now, the resurrection.
The idea that a lot of the world is religious means nothing to me.
Yeah.
I think religion was created years ago by ignorant people because they wanted to make sense of the world around them and didn't know what lightning was. Yeah. And so it doesn't mean anything that people are religious.
Because I want to talk about my epistemology, not the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Let's dig into the epistemology. I feel like a mosquito at a nudist colony. Like, I don't even know where to begin. Okay, so your epistemology sounds like it's a lot of people believe something, so it's true. Is that where you're going, or am I completely missing the point?
My epistemology is based on, you know, you've heard it said that Christ referred to himself as the way, the truth, the life. Truth is that which corresponds to reality.
Okay.
I see that some people have a limited view of what reality can be.
Why?
Beings all over the world go beyond classifying reality, way beyond you and Dave.
Great. What does that tell us about the nature of reality and whether the things they believe are true?
Okay, well, true, but true how? Through naturalism, empiricism, rationalism? Why?
Okay, so let's back up really quick. How do you define true? What is truth?
Okay, truth is that which corresponds to all of reality. Now you got to determine what is real.
Great. How do we do that?
You do that by acknowledging that human beings can perceive what's real in both the natural and the spiritual areas.
You can't just say that and make it true.
Yeah.
You're saying that we all have the ability to determine something in the spiritual realm. Prove that, Kenny. I don't believe that one second. So tell me why that's true.
Well, anthropologists and child psychologists have already established that children, if they could be left alone to feed themselves and all that and develop their own society, would eventually invent a religion. It's man's nature to be religious.
That's not exactly a glowing, that has nothing to do with the whole epistemological thing, but that's not exactly like a glowing recommendation.
That's not making something true or real to say that a bunch of people do it. There's a bunch of people who believe QAnon was a thing. There are a bunch of people who believe Trump's won the election. That doesn't make it true, Kenny.
Kenny, you're talking about perception. I'll tell you this. I've talked to a startling number of people in the last year who believe that they have perceived ghosts, that they live in haunted houses. Do you think that their perception equals reality?
I believe their interpretation could be wrong of what they're actually experiencing. But I haven't been in that house, so I don't know what's going on.
Cool. So are you aware that people's perception can be flawed?
People's interpretation and perception can certainly be flawed. But the vast majority of all the people live being wrong that religion is something that society...
Yeah, you're using the vast majority argument, yeah. And it doesn't flow. Well, I think we've watched.
Yeah, we kind of run to the end here because it is exactly that. It's sort of an argument from popularity here.
Religion.
Okay.
My last point was simply that intrinsic religiosity, according to multiple, multivariate analysis, mega studies, demonstrates that crime and immoral behavior is reduced. That was proved in the debate.
That's not true.
No,
that's not true at all.
You're wrong.
You might want to take a second look at that research. Kenny, we're going to let you go. Have a great rest of your weekend. Wow.
All right.
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah. I lost the studio, so you're in charge of the calls.
Oh, well, we only have one more. So let's see one more.
We're running out of time anyway. So
We've got Peter in Texas wants to know what the goal of atheists are, and are we trying to convert people to atheism? Is that an accurate assessment of what you wanted to talk about, Peter?
Okay. Actually, can I, before I answer that, can I just tell you, look, I've never watched or listened to an entire episode of your show. I've come across things on YouTube where you got little segments, and they've been interesting as heck. Matt, especially, geez, guy's freaking brilliant conversationalist. And what was he like? Is he a lawyer or something? He should be working.
He's okay. Matt's okay. All right. If you were to say that to Matt, he'd be like, please stop. So, what are we talking about?
So I've watched a little bit of your show, bits and pieces, but overall, what is the primary goal of your show? But let me go on a little bit before you answer, because it's kind of a loaded question. So do you mind? It'll be like...
Unload that question.
Okay. So anyway, what is the primary goal of your show, The Atheist Experience? Like, what would be the ideal, ultimate scenario for you guys? Are you of the belief that if everyone converts to atheism, there will be no more holy wars, there will be less violence in the world, and all in all, the world will just be a better place if everyone were atheists? Is that basically what you guys are trying to do, or am I way off, guys? Sorry, I'm not that smart, so bear with me, okay?
Neither am I. So I said at the beginning that the show is a production of the ACA. So the goals of the ACA are the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of religion and government. So that would sort of be the foundational goals of what we're trying to do here.
Okay, but by doing that, what would be achieved?
Well, when you say convert to atheism, that's not really a thing. Atheism is not a thing. It's not. We're not trying to form a different religion. It's a response to the claim that God that there's theism. It's a response to a claim. So there's no big uniform idea behind it. We're not trying to convert anyone. What we're trying to do is help people think critically about the beliefs that they have, because the beliefs that people have inform their actions.
Yep.
And over time, we have seen that religious beliefs inform actions that cause damage to people. One example, kids in my evangelical strain that I was in fundamentalism were taught from birth. As soon as they were old enough to understand going to Sunday school and vacation Bible school, they're taught that you are a dirty, rotten sinner, and that left to your own devices, you will burn in hell, and that you need a savior to rescue you from yourself because you had the misfortune to be born, and you were born as a reprobate, and only Jesus can save you. That does incredible damage to a person's self-esteem and self-worth, and it causes much trauma later in life. That's just one example. I could go on and on, but overall, religion does a lot of damage. Yeah?
Oh, okay, but what you just mentioned there, what if it's true?
What if it's not?
I asked you first.
Oh, well, if it's true, then you need to show some evidence for it.
Yeah. If it's true, then in my experience, everybody at the ACA would want to believe the true thing and then, sort of act accordingly. Yeah.
We're always saying, bring the evidence. We do this show all the time saying, if you've got evidence, bring it. And every caller after caller comes up with evidence that's not there. So we're still looking for it, Peter.
Okay. So if I was to start asking you for evidence of certain things, would you be opposed to that or not?
No, go ahead. I'm not making a claim, though, so go ahead.
No. I'm not really in a position to do that because I've gotten really nothing on my mind. We're kind of going off on tangents here. But
no, but the point is, the Christianity, as a Christian, you're making a claim, and the claim requires evidence behind the claim. As an atheist, we're not making a claim. In fact, you need to understand something. An atheist is not saying there is no God. An atheist is not saying, I believe there's no God. An atheist is saying, I don't believe there's a God. Huge difference. I'm not making a claim. I'm responding to your claim.
Well, I never thought of it that way. You put that nicely.
I'll tell you what, since you like Matt and think Matt's smart, look for more videos of Matt, and inevitably you're going to run into him talking about the burden of proof, and he'll talk about it's like if you're in a courtroom, okay, and someone on a jury is evaluating the evidence, okay, we're saying someone is guilty or not guilty of committing a crime. The burden of proof rests with the prosecution, who is saying this person is guilty. So basically, you've got all of theism out there as the prosecution saying God is guilty of existing, and the atheist for the folks saying we're not convinced, not guilty. That doesn't necessarily mean we think that God is innocent of existing, but here at the ACA, not guilty would be the verdict up to this point.
So, does that make sense?
Okay. I'm sorry, say it the last. I just missed what you said.
I said, does that make sense? What we're, how we're putting that.
Yeah, it does make sense. But I was like, if you ask me, let's say I get on another call because I think you're at the end of your your time limit. I don't even know how long your show is.
Yeah, we are running out.
Okay, so I don't have time to give you proof today because I'm just not organized enough. But if I come on another show and say, yeah, I can give you some proof, and then I follow it up with it by saying, but you guys are going to have to help me with it.
Well, let me ask you this. Just really quick, let's see what we can do. Because if you're convinced that there is a God, you're convinced for some reason, I would assume. So what would be, just off the top of your head, just as we're having a conversation here, what would be your best reason why someone should believe that a God is real?
Well, that's it. I don't want to start getting into it today because this is just not the time. But
okay.
Put my stuff into a better arrangement. And if you, Dave and Ken...
Yep.
Ideally, I'd like to have Matt on because, the guy is just brilliant.
You take what you can get, right?
And I don't even really like the guy, actually, but I think he's...
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's okay. He doesn't like you either. No, I'm just kidding. Well, you know what? Do some thinking, get some notes together. Do some thinking, get some notes together, and call in again.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it. But last question is, I noticed that for something... you don't believe in someone, something, you use God's name and Jesus Christ's name quite a bit. Why is that?
I say Jesus Christ a lot when I'm upset.
Would you use your mother's name as a cuss word?
No. My mom exists though.
And I'll tell you, when I was a believer, I never ever did that. But now, if I step my toe, it's, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's become a thing.
It's fun to say. You should try it.
Yeah. Because in my mind, I might as well be saying, like, Johnny Appleseed. Like, it's not like a real thing, It's just
when,
an explanation.
You don't believe someone's there, you're not worried about offending them.
Yeah.
What?
Of course, you just said Johnny Appleseed's not a real thing. And I just said, but then again, to you guys, God's not a real thing either.
So, okay, listen, before people come at me in the comments about how there like is evidence for a historical Johnny Appleseed, I was just pulling a name out of my ass. Okay, so please direct your hate mail to Matt. I don't know, not because I don't care.
It's done affectionately, guys. Really, I'm just trying to see what your sense of humor is like, how uptight. But you guys seem really cool, and I like that.
We are cool.
My name is Pete. My name is Pete from El Paso. I would like to get on the show another time if I can. And the very last kind of question is just, Dave, man, I heard about the ALS diagnosis, and that kills me, man. I'm sorry about that. I wish I could do something to help you. I tell you, I'm going to pray for you. That's no good. I know that in your mind. Someone else with ALS.
Thanks, though.
And I'm sorry. Anyway, last thing, what can I do to help you? What can I do to make your life better?
You know what?
Send gobs of money. I need money, man. No, I'm just kidding. Just saying that is enough. I appreciate I appreciate your concern, man, but thank you. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
No, I said, that's cool. I'm looking at Kenny and on like YouTube, and he's kind of like laughing, getting a good.
I'm just like, because Dave's got such a positive attitude. And I know if I was in Dave's position, I think about this. I don't know that I would be, able to be as warm and generous and just, you know, kind in the face of, it's weird. I don't know. Cause I mean, I'm fine too.
You know what? None of us,
we don't need to get down that rabbit hole.
None of us know what we're going to do in a certain situation until we get there. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just life is what it is, and we make the best of it. Grab all the moments you can. Peter, grab the moments. It's all about the moments. And this life is the one we know we have.
Yeah. Have a great rest of your weekend, Pete.
All right.
Right.
Is that it?
I think that's it. We're all tapped out. So, Dave, how can people find out more about you?
DaveOutloud.com. It's all the links to all my stuff's on there, YouTube, Twitter, the TikTok, all the stuff.
It's true, you are on the TikTok. the ACA has a TikTok too, people. Go check that out. Yeah, it's sort of just getting off the ground. So throw some support behind that if you want to see some more of that kind of stuff. I want to reiterate, there are ways for you to support what the ACA does. You can become a member, click that join button below the video. I don't remember if I talked at the beginning about how there is a fundraiser going on. So down below the chat, you can donate to what the ACA does. And because it's charity, YouTube's not going to take a cut out of it, which is nice. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/theatheistexperience. Check us out at that tiny.cc/AEN podcast. If you want to get our shows in podcast form, become part of the Facebook community. And again, if you want to continue to talk with us after the show, we'll be in ACD, our fan-run Discord server at tiny.cc/ACA Discord. And last but definitely not least, I'd be remiss if we didn't go back to that crew cam, because none of this would be happening without those wonderful people.
They're the best. They rock.
We got Crew Cat. Nice.
And Matt, get better, buddy.
Yeah. Jeez, Matt, get back. Matt. All right. Well, that's all we got for today. Yeah.